The Nine Lives of Montezuma by Michael Mapurgo. And this is his fourth life. Montezuma spent the first summer and winter of his young life exploring his territory. During these months, he awoke to his own potential as a hunter. The days were slept away peacefully by the kitchen stove, but at dusk, well fed and rested, he would slip out silently through the back door and be gone for the night. Matthew saw little of him during this time. He might spot him skulking around the hedgerows on his way down the road to the milking in the morning, or find him curled up in the barn when he went to fetch the hay. He loved to watch Montezuma basking in the summer sun, or chasing leaves in autumn, or stalking stealthily through the long grass in the orchard, but Matthew never played with him. For him, Montezuma was no plaything, just a companion that he liked to be with. He felt no proprietary rights over the cat. It was not his cat. He was Montezuma, and that was enough. Montezuma felt at ease in his home, most of the time. When Matthew and his mother were in the house, he could sleep secure by his stove. For food, he went to either of them, or both if he could get away with it, and always felt assured of a friendly response. He liked to sit on Matthew's knee and sharpen his claws on the shoulder of his jacket, rubbing up against his ear, but the sound of the father's footsteps was like an air raid siren to him. If asleep, he would awake, look frantically around and dash into the deepest, darkest corner he could find, and then flee the room as soon as he could. Matthew's father had never been deliberately cruel, not as such, but a cat knows when he's not welcome. Countless times Montezuma had been tipped out of his chair and chased out of the kitchen. It was true that Matthew's father had flung a boot in his direction once or twice when he had been yowling for his food, but he had never hit him. Now they simply avoided each other and had come to terms with that arrangement. They could live together if they lived apart. Montezuma had grown into a huge stripy ginger tom with a long tail that he carried proud and high unless he was hunting. His ears were pointed sharply and were long enough to be those of a wild cat. The farmyard was his kingdom. He had made it so. There were other cats that occasionally strayed onto his land, but he made sure they didn't stay for long. And each intruder found to his cost that Montezuma stood his ground. He was fast becoming a lethal hunter with a preference for ambush. His favourite killing ground was in the hedgerows and ditches in the long barley field that ran along the lane down to the river. It was here he had served his hunting apprenticeship, discovered by trial and error the techniques that worked and the habits of his prey. He knew every little crack and hole. He learned to use the noise of the wind as camouflage and to lie in ambush as still as a log. He had come to gauge the speed of their reaction to his attack, to recognise and appreciate their individual capacity for retaliation and survival. And it was only with Sam, the farm's sheep and cattle dog, that Montezuma felt unsure of himself. Sam was never allowed in the house, so that the problem only arose outside the farm. Here, out in the open, they eyed each other at a distance and went their separate ways, harbouring feelings of mutual suspicion and fear. Sam understood that this cat had come to stay by the frequency of their meetings, and Montezuma knew that the dog belonged to the farm and was no direct threat to his feline supremacy of the farmyard. Sam was a bushy black and white collie with long white teeth and a mouth that seemed to pant perpetually. He had that perception and intuitive intelligence that a good sheepdog should possess, and he sensed that it might be wise to give the young cat elbow room for the moment anyway. The two existed as only animals can, with a degree of tolerance inspired by self-interest. But self-interest in two such close neighbours must inevitably clash. And so it did one Sunday afternoon on the front lawn outside the farmhouse. As usual, the bone from the Sunday joint of lamb had been handed to Sam, whose appetite for bones, or anything else for that matter, was inexhaustible. Now, Sam did not usually eat his bone at once. Few bones were worth eating until they had lain in the earth for some weeks. His usual procedure was to trot down the lane to Mr. Varley's vegetable garden, the softest bed of earth in the parish, and there he would bury the bone busily, looking furtively over his shoulder all the while. And when he had nudged all the earth back over with his nose, he would return to the farm with an air of achievement. His nose caked a rich red brown. For an intelligent dog, this was a foolish thing to do. Everyone knew where he buried his bones, Mr. Varley best of all, who dug up the bones whenever he discovered them, and that was often enough. However, this particular afternoon, Sam was tired, and it was hot, and the bone was big, and so he lay down on the front lawn and gnawed contentedly in the sunshine. Now, Montezuma had always entertained hopes of the Sunday bone, and from his vantage point by the stove, he watched Matthew leave the table and carry the great bone outside. He followed only on the off chance and watched from the shrubbery as Matthew made the dog sit and take the bone gently in his mouth. The dog waited for Matthew to go back inside, standing possessively over his bone, and then he turned and padded onto the lawn, dropped his bone and lay down neatly, relishing the feast to come. Montezuma emerged cautiously from the shadows of the fuchsia and sat down on the path a safe distance away. He had a tick in his ear and it needed scratching. The dog turned at the movement and growled a warning. He picked up his bone and moved away towards the garden wall. This wall was a favourite place for Montezuma. It was flat on the top and could be used either for basking in the sun or as one of the best observation posts for local hunting. He had caught a wagtail from there only the week before. He retreated from the shrubbery and in a flanking movement ran around the other side of the wall and sprang up easily. Sam was busily involved and unable at first to decide which end of the bone to begin. After much consideration, he decided finally to stand up and strip it wherever the meat was most plentiful. He planted one paw firmly on it and began his meal. From above him on the wall, the cat watched, biding his time. The phone rang back in the kitchen and Matthew's mother answered it as she always did. No one else ever moved when the phone rang. "Yes," she said. "Oh, we are sorry about that." And then, "I can't think how it can have happened. I'm so sorry." Matthew and his father stopped eating their apple pie and listened through onto the garden. "Oh, dearie me. Dearie me, it must be a terrible mess. Yes, yes, well, we'll be right down. One of us will be right down." She put the phone down and ran back into the kitchen. "It's your cows, Matthew. They're out in Mr. Varley's garden, his vegetable garden. You'd best get down there. Hurry, now." "Take Sam," said his father, "and tell Mr. Varley I'll be right down to help. Go on, lad, get going, else there won't be any garden left." But Matthew was already gone, calling for Sam, as he ran down the garden path. Sam was reluctant to leave his bone. He'd barely started his feast, and he wouldn't leave his treasure out on the lawn, exposed and vulnerable. "Come on, Sam, leave it!" Matthew shouted at him and whistled him up. Sam compromised, picked up the bone, and ran over towards him. "Not the bone, Sam, you blockhead! It's you I want! Drop it now!" Sam said, obeyed, as he always did in the end, and dropped the bone in under the fuchsia hedge out of sight. He backed out, cast an eye around to make sure that no one had seen him, and then sprinted away up the lane after Matthew, who was still whistling for him. Montezuma had watched it all from the top of his wall. He waited until boy and dog were out of sight, and then he moved in, bounding across the lawn and into the fuchsia hedge. The bone was too heavy to move, and anyway, this was a perfect place to settle down. Montezuma crouched down on all fours and set to, still alert, however, to the possibility of surprise. His joy was unbounded as he found more and more layers of rich, succulent red meat. He ate on, oblivious now to the world outside, the shadows of the hedge. He had quite forgotten the dog, and it had never occurred to him that it might return to retrieve its bone. Matthew and Sam were away for some time. It was not difficult to drive the cows back through the broken gate and out into the meadow again, but the explanations and the condolences could not be hurried. Mr. Varley had been a neighbour as long as Matthew had been alive, and in all that time Matthew could not remember hearing a harsh word from him. And even now, as the old man gazed out over his ruined vegetable garden, he simply shook his head sadly, puffed his pipe. He blamed no one. "Suppose it'll save me rotivating it," he said. "We've had a wonderful lot of vegetables this year, so I can't grumble." Matthew tried to apologise and mentioned insurance money. But Mr. Varley would have none of it. "Not your fault," he said. "Not anyone's fault. The cows broke through the gate. It's no use blaming them, is it now? Insurance, you say? No, I'll have none of that. None of that kind of thing. These things happen, and there's nothing the insurance can do except pay me money. And it doesn't take money to dig over a vegetable patch, does it? You go home, my lad, and tell your dad not to worry. We'll put it all to rights, you'll see." Sam waited patiently as the apologies dragged on. He had done his work, and now he wanted to get back to his boon. And when Matthew had finished apologising for the upteenth time, he turned to go. Sam could wait no longer. At the bottom of the lane, he left his master and ran on ahead, his mouth already watering in anticipation. By the time Montezuma heard the dog, it was too late. He was caught unawares and was panicked into a hasty flight. He shot out of the back of the fuchsia as the dog came in the front, but the dog had seen him on his boon, and that was enough. The truce was broken, and it was war. Behind the fuchsia head was the piggery, and the door was open as it always was in the summer to let the air in. Montezuma saw it as a way out. The pen doors at the back of the pig pens would be open and he could make his escape into the orchard and up a tree. But it was darker inside, darker than usual. He looked both ways, but there was no time for a considered decision. The dog was close behind. Montezuma leapt the wall into the pen at the end of the piggery and landed in the muck at the other side. And then, and only then, did he realise that the pen doors were shut fast and that he was trapped. He whipped round and tried to leap the wall of the pen again, and from there he might make it to the safety of the rafters. But the dog was already on the wall, looking down at him, his teeth gleaming white and his hackles up. The dog did not hesitate, and Montezuma was hurled to the ground. He could feel the hot breath on his eyes and squirmed away from the teeth, rolling onto his back and slashing out at the face that bore down on him. And he felt teeth sink into his leg, but took heart when he heard the dog yelp in pain as his claws flashed across the dog's nose, drawing blood. Montezuma's ears were laid flat against his head, and he knew now that this was a fight to the death. Even if he could run, there was nowhere to run to. He had to fight it out. He set up a hideous yowling and spat viciously, swiping accurately at the dog's eyes as he came into the attack. Sam was going for the throat. He had lost all traces of domesticity. He was back to the wolf. His teeth were bared, his face transformed from the soft, loving sheepdog to the ruthless killer. He had made two hits near the cat's throat, conceding a scratched eye and nose, but his blood was up and no cat scratch could deter him now. He leapt forward again onto the cat and struck downward, his teeth closing over the cat's ear. He had him now and shook him until he could hold the grip no longer. Matthew heard the rumpus from halfway down the lane, and he could guess what had happened. And by the time he arrived, there was no stopping Sam, who was quite beyond reason. He leant over the wall and tried to pull him off, but the dog turned on him like a cobra, snapping at his wrist. Matthew ran for the bucket of water he used for mixing the barley for the pigs. He filled it quickly from the tap and ran back, throwing it over Sam. And then he vaulted in over the rails, opened the pen doors to the outside, and bundled Sam out whilst he was still shaking the water from his face. Montezuma lay on his back, his front paws still instinctively sweeping the air above, blinded by the blood from his ear. Matthew talking to him, stroking his side to calm him. "All over, Monty," he said. "You're all right. You'll be all right." He picked him up carefully. "What did you do to get Sam all riled up like that? I've seen him kill a rat once, but he was never that angry. What did he do? Back in the kitchen, they cleaned Montezuma up. The wounds were superficial, although his ear was badly torn and his leg would need stitching. Once the blood was cleared away, he looked more his old self. They took him to the vet, who stitched him up and injected him, and for 2 or 3 days after, he lay by his stove, not eating and going out, and only when he had to. "He's sulking," said Matthew's mother. "He's had his comeuppance," said Matthew's father. "That Sam taught him a thing or two." "He's in pain," Matthew said. "You can tell. He must be in terrible pain." But they all three had it wrong. Montezuma's pride had been hurt to the quick. He had made an elementary mistake in allowing himself to be taken by surprise. He felt no enmity towards the dog, but was consumed by a grim determination never to be caught off guard again. The ear never straightened out after that, and his leg mended slowly. Within a week or so, Montezuma was back on patrol, his pride damaged but intact. And for his part, Sam had a gash across his face, a scratched eye and torn nose. It was enough to persuade him to avoid another confrontation. The two eyed each other with mutual respect now, acknowledging each other as the king in his own world.